I want to test this thing back a second. This is an interview with Teresa McNogue.
Minogue.
Mm-hmm. 7410 Ridge Boulevard in New York City. The interview is being conducted this morning.
That's in Brooklyn. Ridge Boulevard is in Brooklyn.
Okay, in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn.
Okay.
Right.
The interview is being conducted on the campus of Youngstown State University on the 16th of October, 1978. Let me just play that. Mrs. McNogue, tell us something about your family, schooling that you had, and so forth, and your experiences prior to coming to the United States.
Well, prior to coming to the United States, National School of Education, because the 7th or 8th grade, I just can't remember, 8th grade, came to the United States in 1983. On the SS Polk, President Polk. Voyage in that period of time, and a long, long voyage. Arrived in Ellis Island, taken off the big liner onto a little, as we say, a ferry boat,
yeah,
to Ellis Island, where we had to stop to be examined by immigration authorities, and then claimed by an aunt of mine.
The sponsor.
That was the procedure.
Mm-hmm. What's your family do?
My father was a farmer, a small farmer, and he had a large family. My husband, six girls, three boys.
Now, did all of them come to the United States?
And there are four girls here, five girls here, and two boys. One just passed away, and one sister is in England. At that period of time, there was nothing in Ireland for boys or girls. Girls to come to America, to emigrate to America, where we come from.
Did you find the decision rather difficult to leave the homeland, or were conditions so bad that?
No, conditions weren't so bad. We were comfortable. The large family. You really had to come to America, to emigrate to America. My sister came with me. The two of us emigrated together.
How old were you?
18.
18. Your sister was?
She was 17. Who now is going to celebrate her 50th jubilee at the Sisters of St. Joseph in Erie, Pennsylvania. She became a nurse. She went to another aunt who took her in and put her through training at St. Vincent's Hospital in Erie, Pennsylvania. But in Ireland, no work for anybody. Just a farm.
Yeah. In other words, it's kind of subsistence. living?
Yes, at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But now, it's much improved.
Had the depression already hit the economy of Ireland?
Not at that time. You see, we didn't have a depression till around 29 in this country.
Right, right.
29. I was able to go to Ireland in 1932. I saved enough of money here to be able to visit my parents, brothers and sisters in Ireland in 1932. And stayed for 3 months.
Hmm. That was a nice visit.
It was a very nice visit. Then I didn't return again until 64.
Let me ask you, what were the conditions like on the luxury liner USS Polk? Hardly a luxury liner.
No, you wouldn't call it a luxury liner. You came steerage. You got 3 meals a day. Bunk beds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You get up on the ladder, so there's 3 of us in the room, 3 girls in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And all in all, it wasn't. The beds were clean, although they talked at that time of terrible conditions, existing conditions at that time. But as far as I can remember, we got here. You wouldn't be allowed. If you wouldn't be allowed to get off that boat if there was any infection found or any disease found. In other words, if you weren't sure.
Were you aware of this?
I was aware of it as a passenger.
Was there any fear amongst the passengers that they might not make it through immigration?
Yes, there was.
Was there a lot of talk about it?
Not too much.
So just a kind of a...
No, I think you had that before you left Ireland. If you left Ireland, if you got through the consul, as they call it, in Ireland, you're almost sure.
Was there a rather rigid examination there?
In Ireland, yes. Which consisted of hair.
Mm-hmm. Inspected.
Inspected very, very closely.
Mm-hmm.
That I remember. And also here at Ellis Island in embarkation.
What was the cost of the passage over?
I think it was around $100 or $100 and something.
Mm-hmm. Did that include?
That included our meals.
Meal?
On the boat, which consisted of which was about the 21st of March to the 6th of April, which was a long voyage on a liner.
Right. You weren't required to do any work or anything of that sort?
Oh, no. No, we were served and rooms were taken care of.
Right.
Oh, yes, there was nothing like that. Passengers weren't expected to do anything.
How long did the voyage take?
From the 21st of March to the 6th of April.
21st of March.
Yes. That was in 1923. Then I went home in 1932, and I think I got home in about 8 days. The fact that the President Polk had been put out of commission in the meantime.
Yeah. What were your first impressions of Ellis Island? Can you recall?
We sat on benches. Passengers sat on benches, as I say, until they were clean. And then we were clean. That was it.
How long did you have to wait?
Oh, maybe family had to come and claim them. You were not let off. Definitely not let off. Nobody was allowed off Ellis Island until they were claimed by a relative.
Did you know of anyone who had not been able to leave?
No.
That was violent?
No. Mm-mm. Not at that time.
The you had papers with the obviously from the consulate.
On the consulate from Ireland, and you were clear, and your family here who did claim you had to prove that they were able to find one for you, and provide for you for a period.
We've heard so many times the stories of Ellis Island being rather a degrading experience. And did you find it that way?
Well, see, I was only 18 years old. Did you find it to be an 18-year-old yokes to find anything degrading? Mm-hmm. You know, from the country, coming from the country. As you say, you were, in other words, you were railroaded into this room and you just stay there, and you did. Nobody used that violence or anything like that on you. No, no, you just were shown where to sit and stay, and that was it.
Obviously, the language was English.
Oh, yes, yes.
And those, you would have no trouble. Did you know of anyone who was having trouble with the language their first initial experience?
No. No, because we were all able to speak English. And the liner sailed from Cove, or as they called it before that, Queenstown. That was the old name. But now it's Cove.
The how would you describe the conditions of Ellis Island?
Cold, dreary, bare, nothing.
Overpowering?
No, I didn't know what it was.
The type of building didn't bother you at all?
Didn't bother. Mm-mm. Didn't bother me. But as I say, you got into this big room of this little boat, and you sat there. You had to show papers.
Right.
Different things. You had to show a certain amount of money. I think it was, in that period of time, I think it was, you had to have at least what they call about £20. And at that time, you had to show that.
That you brought with
you. That you brought with you, besides your family or your relatives taking care of you, or to claim you, and they had to show that they could provide for you, besides this money.
How long, how did they make contact with your parents? No, your parents, but your relatives.
I had an aunt here.
Right.
And she was the one who took me to this country, and my sister.
Now, did you contact her when by letter saying that you were coming?
Oh, yes, that we were coming.
Then
we would arrive at a certain day, and she was right there.
If she hadn't been there, would the officials have contacted
her? The officials, as far as I understand, would contact her and would not let you off the island.
Then you went to New York. Did you look back at Ellis Island as you left?
Yes, it was a very dreary day. That I remember. Just something like today.
Mm-hmm. Raining.
Raining.
No sun.
One of those spring days, you know. It was neither spring or a summer yet, or just just in the early part of the spring. We kind of got acquainted on work, and that was it.
For a person who had left the family behind,
missed them,
mm-hmm. who had just had a long ocean voyage, no doubt was kind of panic-stricken at what was going to happen next at Ellis Island, but made it through. Now, your aunt, sister, yourself have been cleared to come to the land of opportunity.
Right.
And the streets that were supposed to be gold or platinum or something.
No.
What did you look forward to?
Find work.
Any particular type of work you're interested in?
The most was wasn't too much in this country for it. They hadn't too much opportunity at that time.
Mm-hmm.
The most they had to do was work and all in private homes.
Mm-hmm.
That was about the size of their work. And I think all immigrants from Europe were in the same position. Anything for them to do except work in private homes where we were employed. That didn't go for me. That went for thousands more.
Did you know this before you left Ireland?
Yes, I did.
What was the pay at that time?
I remember the pay at the very first job that I was on employment. I got that. $30 a month.
7 days a week.
7 days a week. Well, we got a day off on Sunday. We got off, and maybe half a day, and then every other day. That was about the size of the work.
Did this include not only the housework and things of this sort, did this include looking after children and
yes,
so forth?
Yes, always. Yes. And mostly, and laundry.
So, no automatic stuff to do it with.
Nothing. There's no vacuum cleaners. Even in the best homes, they didn't have them. You were very lucky if you got into a home where they had a carpet sweeper.
Yeah.
Now that's going by. And carpet sweepers. And that was the extent of the appliances in a home up till about, I should say, in the 30s, late 30s maybe. Late 30s. Now maybe I'm wrong about that. When I got married in 39, I got a vacuum cleaner.
There you go.
So?
What do you recall about the first family that you worked for? Do you remember that family?
Yes. They were Jewish. They lived in Brooklyn. You had to work very hard. You know, you had a big house. They all had very large homes. And you just had to keep going. That's all. The work was there that had to be done, like brushing rugs, sweeping rugs,
mm-hmm.
and preparing the roof. I think that that's the particular family were kosher. Kosher food. Well, that I can't remember too much more about than that.
Did they contact you, or did you hear about employment at their home?
At that, I heard about the unemployment at their residence.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
do you recall how many other people also had applied for that job?
That I don't know. That I don't know. I couldn't remember. I don't remember that job. But I was contacted by it through a friend.
Now, did you live at home?
No, we lived in the house.
And your sister?
My sister did this, something on the same thing. And then, as I say, my aunt who lived in Erie, another aunt who lived in Erie, Pennsylvania, took her to her home and she got her into training at St. Vincent's Hospital. And she became trained. And then after she was trained, she joined the sisters, joined a religious office.
What do you remember about the 20s?
In this country?
Mm-hmm.
It was prosperous.
Do you recall anything about your neighbors?
We had a lot of friends, more so than, of course, friends that. The majority of them are gone now. Our neighbors.
What about the speakeasies and the jazz? What can you tell me about those?
I don't know too much about speakeasies. No, I don't know too much about them. I heard about them. I know about them. In the speakeasy.
Sure.
Tremendous amount of them. Every other store had a speakeasy at that particular time. And they were all either the good or the bad stuff.
Right.
Somebody was brewing it at home, and the higher priced people got it.
It's just like outlawing smoking. You just couldn't do it.
That's right.
And that old German who wanted to have his beer, he was going to have it.
And he's going to have it.
Right.
And it was the same way, although I think it was a terrible time, because whiskey did flow in at that time. And I think it was a very good whiskey. In that particular time, that now is just bring it all back. There was hardly a home. Now, I don't know how it was in this part of the country, but in New York, there was hardly a home that didn't have a steam.
Right.
And they sold it. And they sold it at something like $1.50 a pint.
Which was a lot of money.
A lot of money, but they made it, and it was hardly a home that did not have a still.
Mm-hmm. And usually, probably not the
now,
best.
I don't know what it tasted like, but I never tasted it. I never knew anything about it. I did see the beer bottle, and they made beer too. Mm-hmm. They made it. I remember my an uncle, an old uncle of mine, he was one of my father's uncle.
Mm-hmm.
He made the beers. Also, in that period of time, many young Irishmen immigrated to America.
For the people running the bootleg business on the street, were these people in their 20s, in their 30s?
I should say between their 30s and 40s.
somewhat different than the people who are in the dope business today. Do you recall when they when they raided a speakeasy or destroyed a still? Was there a sympathy for the police or?
There was more sympathy for the party that caught.
That got caught.
That got caught. You know, that really got caught, and that I remember. But next day they were back in business.
There was a demand for it.
A big demand.
Right.
A big demand.
And they supplied
and they
that.
And they were supplied. If you didn't get it here, you got it there. Yeah. Somebody else supplied you.
Right.
Big business in the big season.
As you observed the 1920s with the speakeasies and the relatively acceptable need for goods that could be purchased, money was available, etc.
Money was available.
Did anyone think of any difficulty? Did they have news of the Depression that was already starting to hit some sections of Europe, say in 26, 27?
No. No. People would come to see it happen. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you may not have had that many people in the country, in the United States, or in New York. But there was no thought of depressions, thought about.
Do you recall the word, we called it a panic in the 19th century, the panic of 1873, the panic of 1892, in 1930 we coined a new word, we called it depression. Just like we wouldn't dare use that word today, because it was in your mind, and it would bring back images that, you know, would be, you know, rather difficult to handle. So we call it a recession, which isn't quite as bad.
Not quite as bad.
In the mind.
Yes.
Do you recall any...
of the depression?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I do. I saw the food lines, waiting for to get stamps, and there wasn't that much. There was stamps issued for food. Had tremendous amount of red lines and the selling of the apples. That I saw.
You didn't have any of that though, did you?
I didn't, it wasn't on that.
Where were you working at?
Oh, I had a home, at least. I had, I was working. We read about it. We saw it.
My mother had an interesting job. Am I familiar? My mother had a very interesting job. She worked in a rich home, didn't you? You were Mrs. Buttrick. You know Mrs. Did you mention Mrs.
Buttrick? No, not yet. We haven't come.
Oh, you didn't mention that one.
No, okay. Not yet.
My mother worked for a woman named Mrs. Buttrick of the Buttrick pattern. And they're still
Mrs.
being
Buttrick.
Sold. She was an unbelievable
woman.
Well,
she died in 19. I was there for. Before I got married, I was with her for 7 years. I was getting away from the depression time. Now she 1933.
Okay. It's definitely 30 bucks you got the first job, wasn't it?
I went up to that. It took that many years to get the Spartan wage.
Did she contact you, or did you hear about the job?
I heard about the job. I knew it was going to be there. And she was kind of comfortable. It wasn't she was allowing me, she was in her 80s. She employed a cook and I was able to do cooking when the cook was out.
Did she interview you?
Oh, yes.
What type of questions would she ask you?
Well, how far I was able to do. Of course, I was able to do everything. The main thing was if I was able to do cooking when the cook was on our day off, if you think. And that was really what she was interested in, and to take care of her and take care of the door and household duties.
Many callers in those days?
Some homes, yes. Between five and six.
She didn't want you married, did she?
No, but I got married. I got married.
Did she, what type of meals did she have?
Oh, they were very good. Very good. We had, really, she had served everything.
You obviously ate the same.
Oh, cooking. Yes, there was no distinction. Whatever she cooked, a leg of lamb, piece of roast beef, the health had to do it. Well, the cook had to do it, so the three of us, you did have service. You had to wait on her and serve her meals. Mm-hmm. Yes.
What religion was she on?
She was a
You were employed there from what, 1932?
I went there in 1933.
Mm-hmm. Did she talk much about with you or with anyone about the Depression days?
Didn't bother them. Depression didn't bother those people at that particular time. Depression or recession didn't bother them. Everything went along just the same as it was the working class of people it hit.
Mm-hmm. What about when banks closed? Did she take any steps to ensure that her money would be protected?
Seems to me those people were just so financially well taken care of. That it didn't just bother, their income came in just the same as...
I would imagine that Miss Buttrick probably did better in the Depression because people stopped buying store-bought clothes, manufactured clothes, because they were more expensive, and they moved into making their own clothes, and if they needed to make their own clothes, they probably needed the patterns. So it's sort of like the shoe repair business.
Sure.
The shoe repair business goes up during bad times because,
At that time, I think the garment center was flourishing too. Mm-hmm. And those people did not buy as many clothes as they buy today. Or you didn't have as many coats to wear.
Right. What was this about? She didn't want you to get married?
Oh,
Sounds like
I got married and worked on.
How did you keep that from her?
Well, I kept it. I kept it. We both kept it. Otherwise, I couldn't work, If I was not married, if I was married, I couldn't work. I shouldn't. Their theory. Your husband should be able to take care of
You probably wanted to get a little...
I wanted to work, and I worked as long as I could. I worked for a whole year after I got married.
She did. Oh. She did two nurses. Being a nurse in major future. So you see, they didn't. In back in those years, from, say, 30, 43 and 39, did not bother them. Now, you know, they weren't too... People were just after getting out of, just getting on their feet, unemployment had picked up, and people are getting work a little bit better. I think people saw that there was a war brewing in Europe eventually, factors that there. Was a little better.
Yeah.
Now, were you required to stay in the house
all
the time?
Oh, yes. I was in, yes. Not all the time. I had my free time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And what was your husband's name?
Christopher.
Mm-hmm.
What
type of work was Christopher in?
He was, worked for the DMT or the IRT, the IRT, the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
That's what most when Irishmen did as we landed. He came over here. That was where many were employed by the railroad.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the Irishmen ran the railroad in the city of New York.
This is subway.
Subway.
Now, was he in construction, or was he part of the train crew?
Part of the train crew, yes.
I remember my father telling me once, is this appropriate to you?
Sure.
That he arrived in the United States in April of 29, wasn't it, Mike?
Yes.
And I think he got the job, you know, through Irish friends in New York.
Yes,
he had Uncle Jim. Jim was on the railroad already.
He was on the railroad, and his brother Mike.
And Mike was on it too?
Yes, they were all on the railroad.
Yeah. And he got a job in like May or June. Now, he started just as a porter and, you know, worked himself up to where he was car inspector. But while the Depression hit, he had a lot of money apparently. I mean, Daddy had a job.
We must be thankful that the Depression in those years didn't hit badly. We must have had a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
But you always had the money in your pocket.
And I think regarding that, our family, there's a lot of people in our family who were working civil service. Because I think my mom and my...
The civil service didn't come into effect in
well,
the city until
yeah.
1941.
Right, but they worked city jobs.
They were working for...
Because in our...
They were companies then.
That's right. But
the IRC
was... Right.
It was a company.
But,
and the city took them over in 1941. And all employees eventually became... And then if you had to go, if you worked with yourself like a man, and improve your jobs, you had to pay attention.
And in our family, there's a kind of, many people in our family, cousins, have city jobs, have state jobs, because there's a feeling, well, maybe they're not the greatest jobs in the world in terms of, you know, salary, but they're secure.
Right.
If the market falls apart, if the country's economy falls apart, by God, you'll have a job.
You'll be able to eat.
And it's from concrete experience. All of my family, all my father's family, all had jobs.
Right. I was going to ask, is this the...
It's an order with a hand-me-down. You wouldn't say hand-me-down. You wouldn't call it a father and son job. A father and not like the plumbing or the electrical people. You wouldn't call it that. But it seems they all fell into the cousins, all your cousins, all my nephews. There is a fireman, a policeman, daughter is a teacher. Her husband is a teacher. He worked for TWA. Couldn't get out of there fast enough to get into the teaching profession.
Went to St. Francis while working at TWA.
Married,
five
children. It's a story. It's really.
You said the TWA. You mean PWA?
No, TWA. Trans World Airlines. That's my.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you.
Yeah,
that's what I thought it was. Trans World Airlines.
Yes. No. But there was my sister's husband in the Depression did work. Was on the
PWA
and.
Sure. How did the people see the PWA, which is the Public Works Administration,
yes.
And then the WPA, both of those programs, historians will characterize as being wasteful agencies, money thrown down the drain, things of this sort. But the one thing that they've never or argued against was the fact that it provided employment,
right,
which kept people busy.
Yes.
And we may not have got a dollar worth of labor for a dollar spent, but we kept people occupied.
Right.
Which kept us from going into any kind of a revolution of some sort.
Yes.
Did you have that same feeling then in the 30s about it?
Yes. Of course, I think when you have no responsibility, you don't have such a theory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's only if you have responsibility that you have that theory about feeling of revolution. And I think at the present time, it's always sort of good things at the present time you can't see. Now, maybe I'm wrong.
No. You lived through a decade of one man being president when the decade practically started, and he was still in when it went out, which was something we had never experienced before in American history. Two terms and you were finished.
Right.
And Franklin Delano Roosevelt not only ran in 32, he did it again in 36, he did it again in 40, he did it again in 44.
Right.
Did that bother you as an immigrant?
No. Mm-hmm. I was a United States citizen at that time.
Right.
Because that was one thing when you did come here was people did infuse that into your get your citizenship papers. Become a United States.
That's your safety.
Now, I was a citizen in the 5 years that I came in 23. Citizen in 1938. I could not vote because I didn't have my papers.
But you would have.
A couple of weeks after. So that was my 5 years.
Were you and Daddy both?
No, I was here quite a few years before.
Were you Roosevelt people?
Yes.
All your friends Roosevelt?
Yes. People must be for him because he went in four times, right? I think it was a dreadful time with the depression from President Hoover.
Do you recall any kind of neighborly togetherness as a result of the Depression, where obviously the Irish and the hot-headed English might be at odds in this country, or?
As much as Irish coming here now that immigration has stopped.
Of course, immigration stopped for many, many years.
not stuffed exactly, but you have to go on a week to term.
But the old political bosses always used to say, you know, you show up in the Irish sections of Boston and twist the lion's tail. You know, tell the Irishmen how bad the English are and get the votes, you know. And,
yes.
And this really was a sore spot with many, well, it's one of the reasons why we had such a difficult time getting along with England through the 19th century. It wasn't until she was threatened in Europe by Germany, by more so by France and by Russians, that she became extremely close to us. In other words, 19,
yes.
Really, the Second World War is what really brought the two of us together.
Brought the two
countries good.
Together.
Because
yes.
Politicians used to just raise all kinds of havoc, you know, about how bad English were, particularly in the Irish section. And,
right.
And in Boston and New York and Philadelphia, you know, if you, no matter what your nationality was, if you had your constituency predominantly of Irish, you better go in there and just raise all kinds of cane about England.
Yes.
And so on. Did you have that same feeling?
No. I didn't have that feeling.
I remember Daddy being a little, I remember him talking to me once about before the war broke out. I wasn't alive, but he was telling me that he felt that you know, Hitler had to be stopped, but it was a shame that we had to die for the English. You know, that the Americans had to go over and die for the English, because I don't think there was a great deal of love lost in Daddy's heart for the British Empire.
No,
you know.
Not for the
British. Yeah, this is what I was getting at.
Yes.
But back to that neighbor togetherness.
The neighbor
did you experience it yourself? Did you feel that there was a certain bond of suffering that was going on, and irregardless of your nationality, irregardless of your station in life, there was a sort of help each other?
But everybody was in the same.
Mm-hmm. Kettle of fish.
Mm-hmm. We're all in the kettle of fish, we're all in the same thing. Mm-hmm. So that you couldn't feel too much for your neighbor, you could maybe sympathize with him. Feel sorry for him.
You were married in 39 and had a steady paycheck.
Yes, he always had money, and brothers, they always, as I say, they did work on the railroad. And after that, they were always short of a day's pay.
Mm-hmm.
But construction wasn't much of that particular. It was just a complete, and a standstill.
Then came the war.
Yes.
Do you remember what you were doing December 7th, 1941?
Yes. I had a baby, almost a year old. December 1941.
Christmas Day.
Christmas Eve.
He was going to be a year old. Remember the day?
What
were you
doing? It was on Sunday.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not anything more usual for the nation. Really, it was a sad day. That time, this country was pulled into war, and just some prior to that, Roosevelt had said, "Your sons will never die in foreign lands." Before you knew it, we were at a war.
Do you recall any time in 1937, 38, 39, of Roosevelt talking about the possibility of war?
Well,
I mean, seeing any editorials or hearing...
It's conversation, quite a bit of conversation.
Yeah. And then came the election, see, in 40, and everything was shoved under the table.
Yes.
And then, of course, after the election in 1940, then, of course, hit again. The talk started again.
Yes.
So.
Because the Germany was at war.
No, already.
Already. It's a year on already.
Did you have any kind of mixed emotions about this Second World War? The Irish had really not thrown their lots in with the Germans, but they certainly were not helping the English cause.
No.
Nor helping the American cause, and we had our so-called undeclared war in 1939 through 1940,
yes.
Where we were actually through that North Atlantic, were shipping large quantities of goods to the British.
Yes.
And they in turn were giving us these lend-lease agreements in exchange for it.
Yes.
That was a way of getting around Congress,
right.
You know, in a sense. But did you have any kind of mixed emotions about that?
No. I don't think I had any mixed emotions about it. Of course, I know in that 37, 38 period, United States was doing a big business with scrap iron.
Mm-hmm.
And where was it going? It's going over to him.
Well, Daddy,
and many of your U.S. ships was loading up.
I remember Daddy talking about the Third Avenue L.
Yes.
They took down the Third Avenue L. That's
the
elevated train.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And he remembered me saying that. I remember him saying that. You know, this was being sent to Japan, and it was that Third Avenue L was being thrown back at us on
right.
Guadalcanal and places
yeah.
like that.
Yes.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
Mother. You remember the shortages of food during
oh yes
during
I remember that.
The war.
Yes,
you had no sons old enough for the war.
No, and my husband he had to register.
Right.
But he was.
But see, he would have been what about 40 then at the time?
Probably 7, probably 8. I think he just got over.
Yeah.
But
he was by being with the transit
the
company.
Railroad.
Yeah, that was considered defense work.
Defense work.
Yeah, so he was,
yes.
He had to go take physicals.
He had to take a physical.
But he was deferred.
And then besides, he was married, and we had a child. That and then but many of our friends, quite a few of our friends were drafted.
Mm-hmm.
They were maybe a shade younger.
Mm-hmm.
They were drafted.
What did you do for food during that year, during those periods, Mom?
I couldn't complain because I had a war in that food stamp,
mm-hmm.
rationing. I did all right because you know youngsters were small, and I had a food stamp. So I had what? What were you born?
45.
Well, did you come under the food ration?
Sure.
Tail end of it.
Tail end of it.
Tail end of it.
I was born
so
in
therefore, April. I had the fortune, say, three children, my husband and myself, and children, I could always survive on the quantity of meat that I got. Their shoes was a little problem.
How did you solve the shoe problem?
Well, I did the best I could with it.
Didn't you trade with someone?
No. Mm-mm.
Did you do any trading in food stamps?
I didn't. I gave many times I gave out food stamps. I gave neighbors of mine food stamps who were people like a man and a wife and they had it. They really barely survived.
Right.
And I did give quite a few food stamps, rationing stamps, which they could use for cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had the stamps, you could get the cheese.
and my family weren't big enough to eat hunks of cheese.
Did you own a car at the time?
No. No, we didn't.
Which meant you missed out on getting the A, B, or C sticker for your car window.
Right. We didn't have a car. In fact, my husband never owned a car. We had transportation, you might say, under our foot.
Mm-hmm. We sure did.
We had a bus on the corner, and the subway almost ran under our home. So we only had around the corner to walk.
Family grew up on mass transportation.
I didn't get a car until I was raised in New York. I didn't get a car, and I had the money, but I didn't get a car until I was about 26, because I was in New York.
Sure.
And you've got the subway, the buses, everything, and a car is a desperate burden in the city of New York, terrible burden.
It is.
And Dad taught us the subways. My father knew the subways like the back of his hand, and he'd say, what do you want? You know, we'd be going out of a night dance or something. And he'd say to my father, how do I get to so-and-so? He said, well, you take this, you transfer over here, and you're there.
You're there.
And
that's right.
Yes.
I think there were very, very hard times. That recession, depression, I think it was very hard.
The thing I remember most about my, I don't know if you're interested in me, but my father would take myself and we'd say go out of the night, and we'd always get in the front car in the subway so we could look out. And he would describe to me, I mean, for most people it was just a black hole. That's all the subway was for most people, a black hole, but he knew it like the back of his hand, you know, and we'd be riding through and he'd say, he'd be describing all the tools, all the machinery inside the subway to the safety devices. It was always a very exciting place because he could describe it all to me and teach it to me.
Mm-hmm.
What was Dad's job, Mom? What did he do as a car inspector?
Yes.
What was his job? What did that involve?
Now they're a little more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the old-fashioned subway trains. They were easy to repair because they had good material. They lasted for years and years and years.
Basically, though, when a train broke down.
Yes, if a train couldn't break down, you had to try to get it out of the station, repair it, so you get it out of the station, get it to the yard, get the passengers off, empty it out, get it off the tracks. That was the main thing. Get that train off the tracks. Get it moving.
Mm-hmm.
Get it to the yard. And report on it.
Yeah, if it was sitting on the main line, you know, another train carried away here today.
Right behind you. Now, in them times, you had trains coming in. In rush hour in the morning, less than 2 minutes. They had to move. You were busy, you were on your toes, and the train broke down. The head of the train breaking down.
Daddy would sit around a lot, wouldn't he, until something happened?
Well, yes.
He'd wait for trouble.
You wait for it. Sometimes you have a lot of it, had a lot of it, and you have more of it today.
There was a great camaraderie among my father's workers, among his friends. They were all Irish. And it was a great moment in our lives. It happened once a year. We would go to what was called a communion breakfast, the IRT communion breakfast. It was the Holy Name Society. It was a Catholic men's group, all right? And of course, the whole transit authority was Irish, and therefore the whole transit authority was Catholic. And so once a year, on a Sunday morning, it was usually in May, my father would go, and you couldn't go unless you had made your Holy Communion, which happens at around 7 years old. And I remember from being 4 and 5 and 6 and feeling miserable, feeling left out, feeling just terrible that I hadn't made my Holy Communion. And then once I had made my Holy Communion, I could go. And that was one of the reasons for for wanting to grow up. And it would be just wonderful to go with my father and me and my brother. No girls. No girls. This was a man's affair. This was a sign of manhood. And I remember my sister saying that it was terrible that the girls weren't allowed to go. And we were very staunch that it was a man's affair. And we would go, and it would be wonderful to stand next to my father and see all the men around him, and they'd all be smoking. They're just terrible smokers, every one of them. He smoked a pack or two a day. But they would all be smoking, and it was a very close, tight group. You got the feeling that they were all Irish. They were all very tight. You know, they could speak paragraphs with one look of an eye or one expression of a word. Mm-hmm. They were all very close with one another. And it was a great moment because after the Mass, 8 o'clock in the morning, we would have a parade from the church, which was St. Charles?
No, St.
St. Francis. We'd go mm-hmm. from St. Francis up to the Waldorf Astoria.
And they'd have their breakfast there. Then. So it was a big event.
And it would
last for 3 or 4 hours. You have it here with the fire and the police. And it's big in the city.
Yeah, but it's not the same close binding ties.
Yes.
You know, in this year, this is the thing, you know, we've noticed with big city politics. And one of the things that has made the Kennedy name such a magical name, and particularly in the Boston area, that if there was, you say, they didn't need to say anything, but they knew that if you were an FDR, if you were a Hoover supporter, or
right.
or you were supporting any other candidate who was not part of the accepted politics of the Irish Transit Authority community,
yes.
you were unwanted. And your job might even be in jeopardy.
Yes. Yes.
And you can see why, you know, a political boss would get so tied up with these people. And, you know, when he'd go to Congress and vote, he didn't do nothing to upset those people. We're talking about mm-hmm. hundreds of thousands of votes out there,
right.
and families and kids and relatives
yes,
and so
yes,
on.
Yes, yes.
It was a magical name in our family, and perhaps my mother would want to mention it. I think it's relevant to what you're doing. His name is Mike Quill. You want to talk a little about Mike Quill?
He was the organizer of
Sure.
Read about him.
Yeah,
yes.
We know him. Did you know him personally?
My father did. He knew him personally. My husband.
Yeah.
Yes, he knew him personally.
And Dad thought he was.
And he was in the. He was my husband was really some of the first organizers of the transport workers union. Although that was a big union in England and in Ireland before
right.
it ever came over.
Right.
Of course, he came over here with the same idea that he left there with that idea.
That's right. He didn't lose any of that on coming over.
Oh, no. And he wasn't too long here to be
$1,000 a man to me, into the transport worker.
Daddy worked with Quill when he started, didn't he?
Well, a little while, not too long, because he was too busy with the with his organizing.
I remember all of my friends in the neighborhood and all of the grown-ups in the neighborhood being terribly inconvenienced by Mike Quill's strikes. And of course, in our family, Mike Quill was a sort of a god of some sort, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was no criticizing Mike Quill in our family.
Yeah.
And my friends would say nasty things about Quill, or, you know, and even some of the Catholic friends of ours who weren't involved in the transport workers union. Mm-hmm. And I just remember saying, well, they must be crazy to be criticizing Mike Quill. I mean, how could they? And in our family, it was felt that we had a good living and a good salary and a good protection for everything. Mm-hmm. All the good things that we had,
yes.
Many of them were traceable to the efforts of Mike Quill.
Middle income.
Right. But, Si, what type of house did you have in the 40s, the first decade of your marriage?
Of our marriage, we had a two-family house. Second first floor consisted of 5 rooms, and the second floor consisted of 6 rooms, which we rented out.
Was this a typical New York stone front stoop, or right on the sidewalk,
right,
and so on?
Right, and we had a nice path. Yes. We lived in a nice section in Flatbush. It's very convenient for transportation, which was the big thing.
Right.
The children were growing up, I never felt they were traveling home day or night, which they did. Brendan traveled by subway to high school for 4 years. There's nothing about it.
Not the same fear that you have today.
No.
Now, do you still live in that same house?
No. No. I sold the house in 1972. My children went. And I wasn't safe. And it is not safe today. It was a marvelous neighborhood. In the 40s, the house was built, I think, in 1909. Mm-hmm. And from that period of time, from 1909 to 1972, that was a very excellent neighborhood to live and bring up children.
In the 1920s, there was a movement afoot against bringing immigrants into this country.
In the 20s?
Yeah.
I remember a little about it, not too much.
It was geared primarily against Southern Europe, who they had no skills, they spoke a different language, and
yes.
So on. But they were still Catholic. And the organization which spearheaded that, of course, was the KKK, the Ku Klux
yes,
Klan.
Yes, I remember.
Do you remember that organization?
I remember the Ku Klux Klan. Yes, I remember them in the 1920s. I don't think they invaded
New York. It'd be a bad place to go in, I think.
I don't think they did invade the South.
Yes, and they did invade the Midwest. And small towns came under their influence.
Influences, mm-hmm. Right.
But you don't ever recall any rallies in New York?
I don't ever recall of a KKK in New York. Mm-hmm.
No crosses burning, things of this sort?
No, no, I don't. Why did we have cross burning when?
But being in the latter part of the 20s and into the 30s.
Well, I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. One last question I might ask. Obviously, this country has gone through a tremendous change, and the world has as well. Your parents had to stay behind, and obviously you left there in their latter years of your teens.
Yes.
And got back twice, I think, to visit your parents, you said.
Yes.
And, you know, have you ever had any misgivings in terms of not wanting to give up, you know, your family and not wanting to give up the many friends that you made here and so on, but the fact that you did not have your ties with your own family after those, I think, 17, 18th year. Have you ever looked back with that and said that you would like to have brought your parents over, or you would like to have brought the whole family over, things of this sort?
No. No, I have no misgivings about it, because I did leave a family in Ireland. Mm-hmm. And my sister helped them with what we could.
Mm-hmm. Sent money home.
Sent money home. There's the answer.
Right. Yeah. You recall, say this each week out of your check to send home, or did you just do it when occasionally
you were paid by the month.
And you said so much of that each month had to go home.
And you had to live kind of budget that again for the next, till the next month's pay.
Right, right. Was this the cookie jar thesis?
Right.
A jar for this, a jar for that?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you were kind of held down because you didn't have that much freedom. You couldn't go out and spend a lot of money. You really didn't have that much freedom with those people when you were living in their homes. They employed you, and you were there really for 7 days and 7 nights. And you had to accept that if you wanted a job.
How much did you send home each month?
Oh, maybe 10, 15. But you sent it home. Maybe more. It would be all dependent how your wages were going. But there was years there that the wages for those jobs didn't improve much till about 1933.
Now, did you bring anyone from your family over?
Mm-hmm.
Brought a sister or brother?
I brought over.
You sponsored them?
I sponsored them. Mm-hmm. Along with another cousin. Mm-hmm. At least they had a home to come to. You see, they'd come over. You bring them over. You pay for them. I brought over two sisters.
Younger than you?
Yes. If you had a home to bring them, then, you know, you could, a cousin or an aunt or anybody, you couldn't maintain an apartment yourself. You hadn't that amount of money that you could keep an apartment. That was out of the question.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to live on the means. They got married. They're married now. Two sisters are widows. The other sister, her husband is living. And the members are grown. And they're quite well.
Is your family big for family reunions, get-togethers, things of this sort, or is it pretty much each member of the family respects the other and looks after them and is concerned about them, etc., etc.?
Yes, we're concerned about each other, but I wouldn't think we have too many family reunions. Oh, once in a while we do. Like,
four children.
And, in other words, no?
They're my reunions now.
Yeah.
And then again, at times, we do all get together. We got together here. The 7th of October, one of my sister's daughters, she had her 25th Silver Jubilee in religion. So it was a big family get together, uncles and aunts, brothers, sisters, cousins. She got them all together. That's about the eggs. When something comes up.
Did you go to Ellis Island to get your brother and
No. Brother, that had changed in a few years. Ellis Island was in my three sisters.
Let's see, you came over in what, 1920?
23.
They did away with Ellis Island in 30, didn't they?
Well, before that, I think.
Was it?
Yes.
Because I remember, I know definitely during the Depression we've done away with it.
Oh, yes, we've done away with it. Yes. Because I remember meeting my sisters in New York. Of course, Ellis Island is New York too, but we didn't have to go out in that little boat, pick them up or bring them here.
Right.
Here. No, we had came on the boat.
Well, I thank you very kindly for
You're welcome, I'm sure.
Taking,
I hope it was some.
Well, what we're trying to do is to put together a picture of the people who came through Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've long felt that the textbooks that have told the experience of being such a demeaning situation. Really wasn't so. That the individual who was glad to be here, and the suffering at home was enough that it prompted them to come to the new world to try to start life again. And what little bit of inconvenience, if you can use that word, that they had the experience right here, really didn't mean not a whole lot.
In my estimation. As far as I can remember now, of course this is going back 55 years ago.
Yeah.
It's hard to remember at all, but I couldn't understand that. There was no long wait.
You, one last question. Do you know of anyone, as you were there, as you say you were there only a relatively short period of time, but anyone being turned down?
Not as I remember.
Uh-huh.
Not as far as I can remember. In fact, at that period of time, we were not allowed to come to America to have any kind of, say, TV, tuberculosis.
Right.
We were not allowed to come.
Do you recall an intelligence test? Any kind of a thing that would they would ask you questions which would somehow or other major a grade level
a
or
grade
something?
Level, no, I don't remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure it occurred.
Yeah. Because, we do know of people being sent back, members of families being broke up because
they were returned.
Yeah, the
their intelligence.
Yeah, the father might not be able to pass a certain grade level. The mother did, and the children were allowed to come only because the mother was clear.
Yes.
And they had to make a split decision right there: does the family go on and to the land of opportunity, so
right.
to speak, or does
right.
do they all go
yes.
back?
That I know. That I don't remember. I never saw. I'm there. No, I really.
Well, you have anything else you'd like to
No, we gave
get on the record for...
I think we covered quite a bit of it, if it's of any use to you.
Well, we'll start to transcribe